Welcome to the Practical Revitalization Podcast. We look at revitalization in real time, examining the ups and downs of revitalizing and replanting historic and legacy churches throughout New England and the U.S. Now here's your hosts.
Hello and welcome to the Practical Revitalization Podcast. I am your host, Don McKinnon, and on today's episode, we're going to discuss something briefly, the concept of groupthink, and is that a factor that harms revitalizations? Now, I think we have to think about this, that in church revitalizations, we know that people do not like changes. They fight against changes. They fight against a lot of things that can help make a church healthy. And so I think that research has to go into this idea. But, you know, if you look up what groupthink is, and I'm looking it up right now, it's said to be a psychological phenomenon that occurs within a group of people in which the desire for harmony and conformity in the group results in an irrational or dysfunctional decision-making outcome. And you think about this, how many times people are doing things because either they've always done it that way or they have no idea what they're doing is harming the church, or they have an idea that what you're trying to do is going to make the church something that is not where you're trying to lead the church, but they believe it because that's what they see in dozens of other churches. So it makes us begin to think and wonder, is this a factor that exists within the situation of revitalization? And is this, once we know this, how do we then combat it? And that's where I think the research has to be done. I'm going to go down here, and let me just read some of these quote-unquote symptoms to you. So they look at the eight symptoms that they have, and they break it down into three types. Type one is overestimations in the group, its power and morality. So they have illusions of invulnerability, creating excessive optimism and encouraging risk-taking. There's an unquestioned belief. This is the second one. An unquestioned belief in the morality of the group, causing members to ignore the consequences of their actions. Now, there's a key thing I think that we need to look at in the whole matter, because how many times do people make these decisions not realizing the consequences? In other words, let me just kind of give one where, if they do not understand why you want to change the music, you know, they're thinking that you're going to become a rock concert type thing, and that's not what you're trying to do. I had a discussion with a church member the other day, and they came to understand. They said, even though they're an older person and they don't really like all the music, they understand that music that we are doing, some of the music is there because the younger people like that music. You know, it's not their flavor, so they understand that. But the consequences in the groupthink within a revitalization is where everyone just fights. And we think about, you know, 10-20 years ago, the worship wars that happened. Type two is rationalizing, warnings that might change the group's assumptions, and then stereotyping, those who are opposed to the group as weak, evil, biased, spiteful, impotent, or stupid. And stereotyping really comes into that. Again, it's that thing of, you know, I remember a pastor wanting to remove the pulpit from the stage area, and they thought he was going to become a light loosey-goosey type of pastor. And the thing was is that the pastor has a nervous tic where he likes to walk around, and that's what he does. And so that became something that really, when they removed the pulpit eventually, the people came to understand, and it helped them focus more and help the pastor focus more on the points of the sermon. They came to realize that their pastor really memorized his sermons and was able to deliver that, and it kind of brought them to a new understanding there. But there are people that stereotype. They think that if you're trying to remove this or that or change this or that, you're going to try to become like a quote-unquote nightclub-style church. Or, you know, they just don't understand that certain things have to change. That it's basically best said this way. The modes change, but the gospel doesn't. So, in other words, there are things that a lot of churches still have in their buildings that just aren't being used. They take up space, and people, younger people, come in and they wonder. They see that as false idols. They see that as all sorts of things. And so the groupthink mentality harms the church in that way, and they wonder why they're not getting anywhere. They think that, well, nobody is really falling in, or I guess the best way to say it is this: they come to this real or this belief that nobody is coming to the church because nobody understands or nobody wants a good Bible-believing church. And the fact is within a lot of these churches that do close, these people then go to a church where a lot of those things, a lot of those changes that they fought against have happened within those churches, and they find out that the church is this Bible-believing, and they understand. I remember about 10 years ago, I remember a person saying that they fought against what their previous church was trying to do. They came to the church that I was at the time, and they saw what was going on, and they realized their folly and the fallacy of their beliefs. So that's what we have to be careful of. You know, we want to talk to the people in love when it comes with these changes, but we have to understand that sometimes you might have to go partially down the road, and other times there's going to be no movement. The third type, which has the remaining four, is pressure towards uniformity. There's self-censorship of ideas that deviate from the apparent group census. So, in other words, they are, kind of probably the best way to assume this one is they're blocking their ears. They're the insolent child who's blocking their ears, and nah, they don't want to hear. Then there's illusions of unanimity among group members. Silence is viewed as agreement. So in other words, you know, in a lot of groups, this is the other thing. In a lot of groups, there are people that want the change, but then they stay silent. So a lot of people take it that the whole group wants to stay the same. That becomes a danger, because what can happen is in those instances where the people want the change, if they can verbally express why they want the change or why they see the need for the change, it can help the person who's fighting against the change see why the change is needed themselves. There's direct pressure to conform placed on any member who questions the group, crouched in terms of disloyalty. So in other words, they see a person, you have a group, say, of 6-7 people, and one or two of those people want to go with the change, or they're questioning things, and those five or six people will pressure them, saying that their view is going against what they have always stood up for. And then the final part here is mind guards. And these are self-appointed members who shield the group from dissenting information. These are the people that people like Rayner and Clifton and others talk about, who are the influential people that you need to work with first in a revitalization and get them to see the changes. But in some cases, they're always good to move on and move away from, because these people are going to come in there and things aren't going to change. You think about how many churches you've heard of in your lifetime where people were going for change, and these other people came in, voted the pastor out, and things looked good for another 5 years within that church because they started bringing in people. But this growth that the church was experiencing was transfer growth, not organic growth. And transfer growth is only good for a short time. And in that case, what ended up happening is the transfer growth did not become long-term, satisfying, growing, healthy growth of the church, and the church ended up closing. And the reason why is because people, even though they brought in quote-unquote younger members, those younger members were only about 10, maybe 15 years younger than some of the oldest members, and so they kept this guard of, this is how we think church needs to be done. And this causes all sorts of things. There are other things within groupthink about the causes. You got to look into this. I'm going to make this into a two-part series. I'm going to be doing these short versions of our episodes. I haven't come up with a name for them, but because we're changing our format a little bit, Nat and I are going to do kind of the regular practical revitalization podcast. These little short takes, I don't like that word. You know, I think of some other podcasts where they really use kind of two separate podcasts to bring about the information on a weekly basis, and so that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to end this right now. So we're going to call this part one of, is groupthink hurting the church, or is groupthink hurting church revitalization? And we will come back either next week or the week following, depending on how we do this, with part two, and you will hear that when it happens.